It's probably just 10 years ago, because I heard it, so I don't remember if I read the book, or if it was a seminar in Utah, or somebody else taught. It has to do with the erosion rates of the continents themselves, eroding from, let's say, Mount Everest all the way up to sea level in the states of maximum, I can't remember if it was 14 million or 26 million, blah, 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 years. I never hear anybody talk about that, and I'm looking on the internet trying to find information about it so that I can share that information with others. Do you have anything?
Okay, the question is, we've got these tall mountains today, and we have erosion taking place. We have what's called deposition building up, we have erosion taking place also. Based on current erosion rates, we should have no mountains even near tall what we have today. Now, with the erosion rates, we should have just basically small hills, kind of a very smooth small hills, based on current erosion rate. So the question is, if this earth and these mountains are millions and millions and millions of years old, why are they still here? According to observable science, they should not be. Yes, we have some deposition taking place pushing up, but nowhere near the erosion rate that is taking them down. That doesn't get discussed very often in the textbooks either. So, yes, it would be a couple million years. All these mountains should be just real small hills right now. They certainly would not last for 10 to 15 million years. So, if that answer you're looking at there, because you pretty much answered the question when you came here.
Yeah, except where
can you find this? Where you can find some of this information on the Answers in Genesis website. It's called answersingenesis.org. They have a place there where they have questions. And they have everything categorized by astronomy, geology, biology. We also have a book out there on geology written by a geologist. I don't remember the name of it, but George will give you the name of it. We have it out there. Brand new book on geology. And I think he discusses some of that in there also. On water. Yeah, Andrew Selling, PhD geologist. Talks like he's from Australia. But yes, that's very fine. Also, don't forget the Answers to Genesis website.
You said that the Bible said that the sun was created on the fourth day. Evolution said it was before the earth. My understanding of day one, day two, the evening and the morning, which starts, the day begins in the evening, which is the Jewish understanding, right? And so on. So, but we see as one day, with both evening and morning, light and dark. So, trying to understand a day with that, how do you get the evening if the sun was not created in the fourth day?
Okay.
And because I see in Genesis 1:2, let there be light, okay. And verse 14, let the lights appear in the sky. And many Christians believe that the sun wasn't actually created on day four, it was actually just made to appear. So it was reference to those two aspects, made to appear and evening and morning.
Okay, well let's start with the answer. Let me rephrase some of this. How could the first 3 days be days without the sun? Let's start there. Then we'll do the appear. We'll do a little astronomy here. A little bit of astronomy. And I'm going to ask some questions and we'll come to the conclusion here. What is the definition of a year? What makes a year a year? Well, we know it's 365 and a quarter days, but what makes that up?
Yes. Like orbit around the sun.
Right, you're my astronomer for the day. Right, the Earth going around the sun. That is an astronomical event. That's where we're going to get from. What gives us a month now? What's the definition of month? Go ahead, come on. Anybody want to have that one? The moon, right. The moon going around the Earth once. That's the definition of a month. That's an astronomical event. Now, what is the definition of a day? The rotation of the Earth once on its axis. Do we need the sun for that? No, we don't. The definition of a day is just the rotation of the Earth once on its axis. We don't need the sun for that. Now, we have evening and morning. The Bible explicitly states, as you showed there, God created light. But we do not need the sun and the stars for light. There are many forms of light, such as electromagnetic waves. We also know God is light. What that light was in the beginning, we don't know for sure. We don't have enough information. But we do have God's word that He created light, and He did not create the stars until day four. That is very clear in the Bible. He did not create the sun until day four. That is very clear. This whole idea of they suddenly appear is nowhere founded in the Bible. Nowhere. That is adding to God's word something is not. So I appreciate you bringing that one up. That's a very powerful one, because there's a lot of people out there teaching that, oh, the clouds were there. Then on day four, God rolled the clouds back after moon appeared, and then all of a sudden we could see the sun and the stars. That is not what the Bible teaches.
Well, like, what is the sign here? It says, and then blue ribbon, it says here, let lights appear in the sky. So the word appear, that's from
the it means there's light in the sky right now. Right, He made light. But it doesn't say He made stars into a well. What does it say in day four? And He made the stars also. Made and create are interchangeable in Hebrew language. There's two words that are interchangeable. And it also says, He also made what? The sun to rule the day and the moon to rule the night. That's explicit on day four. All it says, He put light in the sky. It does not say what that light was. But it does not mention the stars until day four. So nowhere in the Bible does it say they appear. It doesn't use that word in there. It doesn't use that word. That's an addition to God's word that's not there. So, great one. Thank you. Because I know you're right on track there. So, appreciate that question. Anybody have another question? I have lots of questions. Yes, sir?
Mr. Riddle, is there any room for a gap theory?
Is there any room for a gap theory? Well, let's take a look at this. There was, at one time, the gap theory was very popular, slowly dying out. Now, what does the gap theory teach? Well, it deals with Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and verse 2. It reads this way. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void. That's Genesis 1, 1 and 2. What they do, let me reread that again. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Stop. Put millions of years of geologic time. Then we have verse 2. And the earth was without form and void. Why did they put that gap of millions of years in there? Not because of what the Bible taught, but what they thought the geologists had proven. They thought the geologists had proven millions of years. Therefore, some of these biblical scholars decided to cave in and add something to God's word that is not there. Now, how did they do this? Well, they looked for Hebrew words to see if they could be changed. For example, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was. They changed the verb was, which is hayam, to became. So now we read, in the beginning, God created heaven and the earth became without form and void, to indicate God created it, then it fell into some kind of destruction. And then God had come back and recreated it in 6 days. Well, the question is, can that verb was be translated became? Yes, but only in very rare conditions can that happen. Only when it's part of a prepositional phrase, and it is not in the Hebrew there. Therefore, it is an incorrect translation to translate it became. So that was an incorrect use of the Hebrew language there by the gap theorists. Then they will use the King James Bible on Genesis 1:28. We see the word replenish there, indicating that God created a thing, something went wrong, and God had to replace or refill the earth. Well, there again, we have an incorrect translation. The King James Bible is not wrong. It is a correct Bible. But we have to understand something about language. When the King James Bible was written in the 1600s, the word replenish meant to fill, not refill. After the King James Bible was written, the word underwent a definition change. See, the word replenish today means to refill, but it did not mean that when the King James was written. Therefore, it's an incorrect translation given by the experts. Then, we have to look at the language again. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth, and the earth was without form and void. Can we really separate those two verses in time? Well, the key word there is and, which is waw, W-A-W. And that word is written in what we call the waw consecutive, which means these are two consecutive events with no time gap allowed. That is how Genesis 1 is written in the Hebrew language. Therefore, again, it's an incorrect translation of the Hebrew language. Also, the gap theory would teach death, decay, and disease before sin. causing hydration very good in Genesis 1:31. He just called death, Cape disease, and cancer very good. Are there problems with the gap theory? Yes, insurmountable problems. We can take God's word for what it says. We don't have to have a circumstance. Thank you very much for that. Any other questions? You get bonus points for asking questions about my grandchildren. Yes.
Do you guys have a book on the gap theory?
Yes, there are books on gap theory. I don't know if we have. In one of the answers books, I can't remember which one, red, blue, or yellow one, there is a chapter on the gap theory there. So feel free to look through and see what is in there. There are books on specifically the gap theory, too. Big, thick books written by scholars. But you can get a chapter and get most of it right there. About 10 pages long. I like those kind of things. Yes, sir.
Find that the Hebrew language was chosen because of its accuracy in dealing with things like that?
Well, do I find how was the Hebrew language chosen? Why was it chosen? I don't know. I can't give an answer to that. Why the Hebrew language was chosen? It's always difficult to translate one language to another. Anytime you translate languages, something seems to get lost. Because there's words in the Hebrew we just don't have today, or we have words they didn't have. But that's because new things get invented too. So it's always difficult to do translations. So for instance, if you translate a book from German to English, you're going to miss some things there. Just because of the way they emphasize certain words. So I don't know the answer to that one. Yes?
Okay, this question sort of includes the gap theory because they put this in the gap. Satan used to be the highest angel or whatever when God created him, right? And then he fell and he took one third of the angels with him, and they put that in the gap.
Yes, called Satan's fall.
Cast out, in, but he's still in the heaven. He's like not earth yet, but just that he came. And then when Adam and Eve succumbed to Satan's temptations, that gave Satan the power over ruling the earth.
Yes. Okay. What they assume now, and there's different forms of the gap theory. There's a lot of different versions of the gap theory. But one of the main versions was, during that gap, we have Satan's flood or Satan's fall, and everything goes into ruination. But that's a problem, because in Genesis 1:31, God calls everything very good. He just called Satan, who was, at that point, evil, very good. That would be a problem with the gap theory now, wouldn't it? Calling Satan very good when he's already destroyed everything. So that doesn't work there. Satan's fall had to happen after Genesis 1:31. When? We don't know. But it had to happen after Genesis 1:31 and before Adam and Eve rebelled. How long was that? We don't know for sure. Some people think just a week or a matter of weeks. We didn't last very long, did we? We can give an upper limit, but we don't know for sure. We don't have enough information to be dogmatic on that. But he did say that he was very good. That means it has to still be pretty perfect. Good. Those are good questions.
I'm asking this question not so much because I'm interested in it as much as because it's a question they get asked in the line.
I'm at a secular university college this morning.
Now, I can't remember the name of this quote-unquote transitional fossil farm between the north and the hidden. It's got some kind of an Inuit name that they gave it. It's kind of a mold fish, sort of like mud skipper fossil. And that's it. Can you speak to that?
Yes. What evolutionists are looking for is some fish that was growing legs and become an amphibian and eventually a reptile on the land. Well, it made a pretty big splash. This was the transition between a fish and an amphibian. When it was analyzed, what they found out is those so-called legs really aren't legs, and they don't attach directly to the column there, so it couldn't support itself on land. So they didn't give all the information. Secondly, there is no mechanism. I'm going to cover this tomorrow night. I'm going to cover mutations and natural selection. And I will show, definitively, neither one of those support evolution. Mutations and natural selection are a showstopper to the whole evolution model, which means they have no mechanism for one creature to change into another. That's what I'm going on. I'm going after the origin of life, and we'll be talking about that tomorrow night. Because, why? In every textbook, I don't see very accurate definitions in there. I've looked through a lot of textbooks. I can't would say exactly what it is. So, yes, so everything you find is fully formed. Pitilat would work. They've tried this before on a coelacanth. Where the coelacanth was supposed to be extinct for 70 million years. And we found some fossils. And what did they say? Oh, this creature was growing legs. We found them still living in 1920. And what did they have? Fins. They're 100% fish. So the track record is misinformation, mischaracterization. So when do we trust them when they keep making false arguments? See, they've lost the trust. They keep making claims and keep being wrong. So why should we trust them in anything? But you don't really have to argue against all the transitions. Just show that there is no mechanism for those transitions. Going after foundations, that's what I try and teach people. Understand the foundations. It's like just a big bang. We can't have a big bang, they got back. So where did matter come from? A great big bang. We know from nothing, nothing comes. So that ruins the whole big bang thing right there. Yes, who's got the next one? Is that okay for that answer?
That's excellent.
Thank you.
The gap theory is in chapter 5.
Chapter 5. These, again, are the three books. This is one of the books here. In this book, I wrote the whole chapter on carbon 14 and a whole chapter on radium education. For the carbon 14 one, I used all the evolutionist's own documentation. Went through every one of the radiocarbon journals. You know what I found out? Those things are real snoozers, folks. Yes, sir.
I'm just curious. I'm always curious about the pyramid. The canopy?
The canopy.
Before the front came in?
Right, where it says separate the waters from the waters, put the atmosphere and the pyramid in between.
And also, there was just one worldwide season for the whole Earth, giving those things.
Yes, now the canopy theory, we used to hold to that quite a bit. We're being very cautious on it now. We went back and studied the Hebrews more, got some Hebrew scholars to look at it. There were some problems with the canopy theory, with the vaporous cloud circling the earth, and that's where all the rain came from for the worldwide flood. What we discovered through atmospheric scientists took a look at this, they said if that canopy, vaporous canopy, got more than about 30 inches thick, they said that's not even enough for 2 days of rain. We'd have tremendous heating conditions down here. Life could not be supported because of the reflection of the sun and the heat. Wouldn't be able to escape. So, we're looking at the Hebrew again. What we believe is that vapor's canopy would be more at the edges of the universe, is where we're putting it down. We just don't have all the information to determine what it really was. So, it's hard to be dogmatic on it, but when we look at the science of it, it doesn't seem to work in circling the earth at one time. So, we put it much further out there beyond the stars. And that's kind of the Hebrew scholars have kind of translated that way now also. So, does that answer that one there? So we're just being cautious on it, is what we're doing right now. We can't give a definitive answer, we just don't have enough information. Yes?
Okay, my question comes from, I literally believe, so that the firmaments and the waters above the heavens and below.
Yes.
Can you expound that?
Yeah, the waters above where we can probably put the canopy now. Which be above and beyond the stars. That's what the Hebrew scholars looked at, is trying to translate what that actually means.
So then the waters for the flood would have just come from the waters from the flood,
what we believe the waters from the flood would have come from is most of the springs of the deep. That's where most, because that was about 158. Now, if we put water very deep, very deep, and that's tremendous pressure. And when the things start splitting up, the fountains of the deep split, that water under tremendous pressure would come up and shoot very high into the atmosphere and come down, maybe looking like rain. But we do not put it beyond God, the supernatural, caused a lot of rain for 40 days and 40 nights also. We don't have, again, enough information to be dogmatic either way. We weren't there to see this. But he told us it rained for 40 days and 40 nights. That could have been supernatural. Could have come from some kind of canopy up there, we don't know. But it could come from the springs of deep bursting forth under pressure coming back down this looking like rain.
But he said
yes.
It rained.
Yes.
Unliterally.
Yes.
He said it rained.
And that would look like rain, exactly. So I tend to go with he made it rain for 40 days and 40 nights. That's a lot of water.
Okay, getting back to the stars and stuff.
Yes.
Wasn't there one of the probes that sent out scattered data that actually found water way up in the middle of space where they didn't expect it?
We have not found any liquid water anywhere, but we have found
frozen.
Frozen, exactly. And that's not a problem, by frozen water. We believe we found some on Mars, too. But here's the problem. Water is one of the worst places in the universe for life to start. Why? Because there's a property of water called hydrolysis. Hydro means water. Hydrolysis literally means water splitting. At the molecular level, water destroys chemical bonds. So why are they looking for water? Well, we need water after life to start to survive, but it can't start in water because it destroys the bonds.
But they have bonds.
Yes, yeah, yes. On meteorite, on comets, and Mars, we believe we found some, but nothing liquid. Okay. I'll finish with the final question if nobody has one. Oh, we have one more here.
It's a short one, I promise. In my early years, coming to understand creation science versus evolution, one of the major concepts that was instrumental in gaining understanding of it was the hydroplate theory, Wolfram's theory.
Yes.
And I understand that in recent years, it's more or less in the creation science community been debunked. My question, I guess, is there any scientific value to it at all? Or, I mean, because I know that I understand how it works. The catastrophic plate tectonics is new to me. I didn't hear it until last year. So I'm trying to reformulate where I should be at with that.
Okay. Walt Brown, he's out of Phoenix. He's a good scientist from MIT, engineer. Taught at the Air Force Academy of Physics for many years. Wrote a book called In the Beginning. Very good book. In there, he talks about the flood and the hydroplate theory. Has it been debunked? Well, not really. Some geologists may not like it because it doesn't agree with their opinion. But we brought up many different creation geologists all have different opinions. And that's okay. We're all living in a little six-day creation. Now, hydroplate theory is what I almost described right there. The springs of deep burst and dwarf from coming back down this partially rain. Now, that could be very valid. We don't know. So his idea of hydroplate theory has not necessarily been the problem. Just so some geologists don't agree, but some happen to also agree with it still too. So we don't know. Again, we don't have enough information to confirm. But Walt Brown was a very, very smart man. Very smart man. So be careful about not buying into it. I like his book. It's a pretty good book.
Yes. This might sound like stupid.
Oh, wait a minute. There's no such thing. Well, there are dumb questions, but you're not allowed to say I have a dumb question. Why? Because how do you think I feel if I can't answer it? This is a great question. This is a great question.
This one. I used to get told that when the gods come,
there's
a thousand years.
Okay. Let's look at that.
What do you got to say?
Okay. 2 Peter 3. A day is 1,000 years, 1,000 years is the day of the Lord. Doesn't that right there show that a day can be a long period of time, therefore the creation days can be a long period of time? No, it does not. Let me show you why. 2 Peter 3, in its context, is not referring to the beginning. It's referring to the end time. It's referring to the attributes of God that God created time. He's not bound by time. Also in 2 Peter 3, there's the word as. That word as turns the whole verse into what we call a figure of speech, meaning it's not meant to be taken literally. But Genesis chapter 1, we do not see the word as. Genesis chapter 1 is actually written in the Hebrew narrative format, meaning it's meant to be taken literally. So people using 2 Peter 3 to show the days created a long period of time are actually taking God's word out of context. When we read something, we have to keep it in context. So does that answer your question there?
Yes.
Very good. So keep looking at the word as. Some versions have the word like. The word like and as turn a phrase into a figure of speech. So you're not meant to be taken literally, but that's not in Genesis 1. Yes.
How would you explain the life expectancy reduction over, like, from creation to now? Because, like, Adam lived like thousands of years, and now it's like 80 or 90 for nowadays.
Yes, the life expectancy reduction. Well, what we see is before the flood, people were living to be very, very old. Anybody know the oldest verse in the Bible? So, how old was he? 969. How do you live, like to live to be 969 years old today? You make a prune look good, folks. Yeah, so if we don't have all the protection, now there's several things that's going to be occurring here. One could be supernatural. Goes through before the flood. Actually, we have tablets, the well-blooded-out prison tablets. All those tablets, it lists 10 kings who lived before the flood. It all said they lived to be hundreds of years old. Then also on the well-blooded-out prison, it has a list of kings who lived after the flood that said they didn't live very long. Matthew and Bob Jesus. Now, what caused that? Well, we see that the atmosphere was probably a little bit different before the flood, because we find a lot of biomass. How do we know that? We know fossil fuels aren't forming like that today. To make that amount of fossil fuels, there'd be a lot of biomass out there, which means the carbon dioxide levels would be different possibly. And maybe if there was a canopy up there, and it's not there anymore, we have a difference there. But also, there's many other things, such as diet. We believe we have found something that causes physical death. It's part of our DNA. Our DNA is made of things called chromosomes. At the endpoints of your chromosomes, you have these things called telomeres, which are little buffers between your chromosomes so they're one together. But every time your DNA gets replicated, some of those telomeres are lost, and it gets shorter and shorter, and it becomes a dead cell. That may have sped up. The real question is, well, we know we don't live as long, because we have a historical record both in the Bible and on tablets. There could be a lot of things that have caused that, but God could have supernaturally changed some things in there. But we don't want to be that old. Plus, the magnetic field of the Earth is decaying, which means more harmful rays are coming in, so we don't live that long either. A lot of things have changed after the flood. So that's the best we can do. So the question you might ask is, why don't we continue to live forever? Why do we die? If we turn the question around, why do we die? Sin. Thank you. Excellent question. Excellent answer. Sin. Very good. Because we were made to live forever, weren't we? The Bible actually teaches we were made to live forever. Because what does it say in the Bible? That if they could have stayed in the Garden of Eden, they could have eaten from the tree of life and live forever. But we were made to live forever. But we don't because of sin. Thank you. Very good. Yes, sir.
Yeah, in your own experience, what percentage of pastors and teachers and Christian writers and seminary professors take a firm stand on creation in 6 days.
Okay, percentage-wise, I couldn't give you an exact percentage, but I'll say this well outnumbered. That's good. You know why we're being outnumbered? Here's how we're outnumbered. I was in the United States Marines, Captain of the Marines. When we're outnumbered, wow, what an opportunity! God's given us a great opportunity. What that means is the harvest is ripe and plenty. For all of us to go out there and be evangelists and tell the truth. But I couldn't give it a percentage. All I see is we are vastly outnumbered.
Why do you think that is?
Why do we think that is? Several reasons. Number one, Charles Darwin legitimized it, and a lot of scientists saw this, and theologians jumped on it without studying it. Also, another reason. Sin is the main reason. Let's go back to the main reason. Sin. We have more fear of man than we do of God. But in the United States in 1920, there was a man by the name of John Dewey. Not of the Dewey Decimal System, but John Dewey, the atheist, the socialist. He was one of the leaders of the modern progressive education system. And he had a strategy, and I'll commend it. He had a very good strategy. The church should use it sometimes. It's called biblical discipleship. He developed disciples of his philosophy. How did he do that? He went into the teacher colleges and started training other teachers with his philosophy. Who looked into the teacher colleges and went out to be teachers who started training more teachers, who started training the next generation. In other words, he took control of the public education system. And what was his philosophy? There are no gods, there are no supernatural forces, and there are no absolutes. And religion is dead. We've now gone through several decades of teaching. In other words, whoever controls the education system basically owns the next generation. We're outnumbered because what we see is over 80% of our Christian youth still go to public schools. And what are they getting there? Not what the Bible teaches. And they're getting beat up over and over again. And they're not being trained. That's why we started the new ministry. We're outnumbered, folks. We're outnumbered. We're surrounded. We're out financed. And there's surrender and compromise within the ranks. I like to speak military. What an opportunity we have to engage the world. Don't look at this as
let's be David's and face our Goliaths. That's what we need to do.
So it's not only an ancient world, it's also an ancient church.
Right. So I have a 20-year goal. My 20-year goal is to take back our Christian churches and take back our Christian schools by growing up a whole new generation that will stand in the fire of God's word, not be ashamed of it. That's my goal. Let's take this as the last one here. And if you have more, whatever, right, buying books, I'll be up here to answer more questions.
After what was just stated to you, there's another thing about the education system, I think. I met this at a couple of professors a few years ago, Trinity Western here, including economics and psychology and the science. And the science teachers were theistic evolutionists and so on. But even in the psychology and economics, what I'm getting at is that they're hired because they have a degree. And where did they get their degree? At a secular university teaching humanistic and evolutionary views, right? So they get their qualified degrees. Well, what qualifies them to teach at a Christian college? Because they're Christians with their degree. But have they ever searched for alternatives in science, in economics, other alternative views of economics, other than what was taught years ago at the universities in Keynesian economics? Samuelson and Scott, for example, is a book that Trinity Western used the same. But I asked this one professor, and I said, have you ever heard of the Chicago School of Milton Friedman, but the Austrian School of Economics? No. Others under his school, for example, are very free market, very moralistic. There's a lot of Christians in that group. And they have alternatives to the irresponsible Keynesian economics, which this professor had never even heard of. And he never took the time, either getting his degree or after, to find an alternative, and yet he got hired. So I think that's still going on, and that's problematic of why the Christians, even at Christian colleges, the students are not getting.
It could be dangerous to go to Christian university. Your son or daughter could end up being very compromised and lose confidence in the Bible. You have to make sure where you're sending them that they hold the authority of God's word, or don't feel like they're going to be salt and light unless they're very well trained. They must have answers to these things. You know, why does a day mean a day? And how to refute the opposition, such as the gap theory, 2 Peter 3, Genesis 2:4, the Hebrew language is poetic. See, we have answers to all of those. The Hebrew language is poetic, but it can also be written in the narrative. And you can tell the difference. In Genesis 1, it's in the narrative. So we need to train in those things. How to answer questions about the fossil record. Why they believe in creation. They need to understand why they believe in Christianity. Why they believe in the Bible. Where did God come from? They have to know those answers, or we will continue to lose over 70%. Trinity Western used to have a professor there, Dr. John Weil, who was a mathematician and astronomer. He was a very strong sixth-day creation. So it can't happen in there. He's no longer there. He's retired, but it can't happen. But you've got to be careful where you send your children. And I'll finish with this. Who's the number one teacher in a child's life? The parents, folks. Regardless of where you send your child, you are ultimately still responsible for training up your children the way they should go. Don't give that to anybody else. Thank you very, very much, and God bless you.